Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to History Dweebs. I'm Tim. I'd like to welcome you to our episode, which is on the outlaw Elmer McCurdy. You had a pretty interesting career as a bank robber and train robber, but an even more interesting career as a curiosity in his post-mortem days. We're going to get into that.
That's dead.
Yeah, that means dead.
Some of our
after
listeners.
Death, yes.
I know Scott listens to the podcast, Scotty K.
Yeah.
That's post-mortem means after death.
Oh, okay. Scott. So, Scott, yeah. Happy birthday, Scott, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Today's his birthday.
It is.
So, happy birthday to Scott.
We're dedicating this one to you, Scotty.
Yes. He has a new podcast. If you get a chance, we got links to it on our Facebook page. Check it out. Scotty J's History Podcast, I believe is the name of it. And I listened to his podcast the other day on John Wilkes Booth. It was pretty good. So, if you get a chance, check it out.
Scott's pretty much an expert on John Wilkes
Booth. Man, he is.
And you know, I wonder, why can't he pick a good guy?
Why can't all Scott these assassins and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, he likes Aaron Burr, too, so he likes the gangsters.
He does. Aaron Burr was crazy.
The OGs. Okay. So, let me do a quick introduction here. We're without our, we're without the evil force today. Brandy.
We are.
Is not with us, and I know that, you know, she has her own little following out there, cult.
The cult of cackling hens.
Team Brandy.
Yeah.
So I know she has her own little following out there, her own little, you know, cult. A little, she's sort of the Jim Jones of the podcast.
Yes.
Brandy is currently, where's she at, Colonel?
Brandy, and was it Winona Ryder that was got arrested for stealing all the stuff?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Now, Brandy, now you know Brandy worked here. Her husband got a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy.
She
know,
doesn't need to steal.
She doesn't need to steal.
Yeah.
But she's a kleptomaniac.
Thing. Yeah.
And Brandy was out shopping at the dollar store, of all things.
Yeah.
And just loaded a bunch of stuff up in her purse.
And didn't pay for it.
$17 worth of stuff,
yeah.
To me.
So
she's currently incarcerated at,
yeah, we're
at the Hamilton County Justice Center. If you want to put any money on a commissary account, it is. And actually, if you just send money order that said apply to the devil's commissary account, they'd know who she was down there.
Yeah, yeah. They just look for the cell where they just, you know, follow the pentagrams or guess.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
So we're hoping Brandy will be, you know, free soon, at least out on bail to join us for our next podcast. And I know we took some, you know, my mom, you know, who listens to all our podcasts, she seemed disappointed in our last podcast because only one person died in it. That was
Dottie likes a lot of death.
Yeah, that was the podcast on Tony Joe and the Cowboy. She said, well, only one person were killed. I was like, how many, you know, do we need a quota? I mean, what? So for those of you who like serial killers, we have a top, I always hesitate to talk about future topics because We never know what the hell we're doing from one day to the next. But we, and we change our mind a lot. But
we should note that we work together and none of us know if we're going to have a job one day to, well.
Exactly.
You pretty much know if you're going to have a job, but me and the devil, we don't know from one day to the next.
Well, you don't know. She, you know, she, even if she's here, she's, you know, has a ankle unit bracelet on. So.
Yeah.
But so I hesitate to promote future podcasts, but we do have one on the serial killer coming up. It's going to be pretty good. And we have one on a murder mystery. I know a lot of our listeners like murder mysteries, and they listen to other podcasts. They have murder mysteries. It's not really our thing, but we're going to do one. I think it's going to be a really good one coming up soon. So stay tuned for that. If you like, you know, you like a lot of murder, you like a lot of death, you like a lot of gore, we've got them coming up. It won't be in this episode, but it'll be coming up soon. So, Mom, hang in there.
Yeah, and this one that we're Timmy talking about right now, this one occurred right within a mile is the crow flies at the colonel's house.
Yeah, yeah, very close. The murder mystery we're talking about. We won't do it today, but we're going to be doing it soon. I'll think you enjoy it. Today, though, let me introduce first my co-worker here, the Honorable Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Oh, quite well, Timmy. Now that we can do a podcast without constantly being interrupted by...
Yeah. Oh, Marvin's wife should be happy this podcast.
Yeah, Marvin, run and get your wife, because this won't be the devil jumping in, blah, 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 blah,
yeah,
when people are trying to make intelligent conversation.
Yeah, cussing like a sailor.
Oh, she does. Yeah. She fits me right, blush one day.
She fits right in there, down there at the Justice Center, though.
She does.
Yeah.
If you stay up late at night, you might catch her on the show Lock Up. I think it's on MSNBC or something. Lock up.
Yeah.
She'll probably see the devil on that.
Probably will. She's probably in solitary confinement. This
normally is.
Yeah, yeah.
They put a little cross and garlic at the edge of her thing to keep her from crossing the line.
Oh, my God. Now, Brandy will be back soon. She actually is not feeling good today, so get better, Brandy, even though she doesn't listen to her podcast, but that's a whole other issue. Colonel, let's talk about any shout-outs real quick before we get started.
I'm going to give my normal three. Of course, Beverly, you know we think about you every day. Beverly, me and Beverly have some exchanges.
You and Lady Beverly?
Me and Lady Beverly on Facebook. She keeps me updated on what's going on in her life, and she lives a very interesting life. And you can find my Facebook page, and if anybody wants to Facebook me and friend me, you can. I love to hear, you know, I have a peculiar thing. I like to hear about people you live in Texas, you live in California, whatever. What is your life like? What are your kids like?
That's interesting
to me. Mm-hmm. So Lady Beverly, as I said last show, she got a brilliant daughter. So she keeps me up on what's going on over in Britain, and she had some questions about American football that, you know, I answered for her. And of course, we're going to give a shout-out to our number one fan and the holder of all that is dear to us in our hearts, Dottie Scott.
Yeah, she's healing, but she wants more death and mayhem.
Well, Dottie, we're going to get you more death. We'll do the Hindenburg disaster or something for you.
That'll make her very happy.
We're going to try to average 6-7 deaths per episode for you, Dottie.
Yeah.
But
because one is just not enough.
It's not worth her time.
Jesus. I was like, Mom, she shot the guy point blank. He's praying for his life.
Took his clothes off.
He's shivering, praying for his life on his knees. She shoots him point blank between the eyes. I mean, how much gore more?
But it was just one.
Yeah, it was just one. I didn't see much to that. All right, so, you know, blame me, Mom. I pick out the episode. So, okay. So, okay, Lady Beverly and to Canute. I want to give a shout-out to Tricia H., who sent us a nice email. Michael Moody, who sent us a nice email. And to the folks, a couple of folks who get left us nice reviews on iTunes, we really appreciate it. If you leave us a review on iTunes, it means so much to us because that helps other people find us. So if you like the show and you enjoy listening to us, get a chance. We would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. And thank you for the people who took the time to do so. So any other shout-outs, or we're just going to jump right in?
Well, and we got Storm.
Storm, of course.
Storm is pretty much... Storm and Rudy are pretty much the mascots of the show.
Absolutely. And shout-out to Allie, and also to Brittany Nicole. Did you get her picture in the mail yet?
I had a problem with the picture. Timmy, you know what? I went up there. I got an 8x10.
Mm-hmm.
When it came out, it was very pixelated. And I said, you know, this is not really the quality that the Colonel needs.
Isn't it? Doesn't it live up to your standards?
It does not. And so I sent him another one. And I will pick that up tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. Apparently the file I sent him wasn't big enough.
Oh, okay.
And they needed a bigger file. So
you sent a digital. You're getting a digital one printed.
Yeah, I'm getting a digital printed, and Rudy got to sign it.
Okay.
And,
okay.
So we'll get it out to you.
We haven't forgot about you, Brittany Nicole.
Yeah.
It's coming. Okay, so let's talk about the outlaw, Elmer McCurdy. He had an interesting life.
And this guy really did more for law enforcement than anybody else.
He was
pretty much a deputy.
It was a strange, bizarre story. So, no, he's not a serial killer. There's not a lot of mayhem in this, but, well, a lot of mayhem, just not a lot of murder, but it's a funny story. So, I'm going to read it, and the colonel is going to commentary, because the colonel has a malady, I guess you would say.
The colonel... And you got to be careful with this. It's silly to even talk about it. But
the HIPAA laws. You don't have to.
The colonel likes hard mints.
Yeah.
You know those little red and white peppermint. But I like them in the green. I like the green kind.
I like the green kind.
Those little star mints or whatever the hell you call them. But my problem is the colonel impatient, and I chew them. And when you chew them and you crack them, they become sharp like shards of glass.
Yeah.
And I actually. Timmy, I impaled my tongue. Which, when you put a big slice on your tongue like that, it becomes a canker sore.
And so you're struggling a little bit with
it. It can be very difficult to talk and even eat.
Yeah. So no, I bet it is. Yeah. So you're kind of injured right now.
I'm playing hurt, Timmy.
Yeah, you're playing
but
hurt.
You know what? I will. If I can sit in this chair, Timmy, I will do a pot. Unlike the
other
devil
person.
Over here,
yeah.
The one not here who shall not be named.
Yeah, who's incarcerated. At
yeah,
home. Yeah. You know, that's funny. You mentioned that little accident because it sounds like something Elmer McCurdy would have had. Elmer McCurdy was born in Washington, Maine, on January 1st, 1880. A couple of things about that. One, Washington, Maine. It's like he's living in two states.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't like when people do that.
I don't either. I don't like when towns name their...
Like Kansas, Missouri.
Yeah. That's just confusing.
What the hell does that mean?
It confuses the hell out
yeah.
of me. He was born on January 1st, 1880, which means his mother was pregnant during the holidays.
Has three quarters... The devil got this thing about people being pregnant during the holidays, and the gestational period for a child is 9 months, which means 75. There's 12 months in a year, and doing the math, which she doesn't do. Because we don't want to get into any kind of disability that she
has, right.
But
her intellectual capability.
Exactly. It means 75% of women are going to be pregnant over the holidays. Yeah. Over some holiday, for Christ's sake.
But I just wanted
if
to...
If it ain't May Labor Day or, you know,
I just
Memorial
wanted to throw
Day.
That out because I know Brandy would have brought that up if
yeah.
I hadn't. But it was January 1st. I wonder if he was, like, the first baby born of the year. I wonder if his mom got any prizes or anything.
It don't sound like she got a prize with this guy, Timmy.
Yeah, it doesn't. He was the son of 17-year-old Sadie McCurdy, who was unmarried at the time of his birth. And that had to be...
Oh, the whore.
Yeah, in 1880. Man,
oh,
that's
disgraceful.
Yeah, that was probably... I mean, that was frowned upon back in the turn of the...
Now, there ain't nothing wrong... These days, there ain't nothing wrong with having a baby outside of wedlock.
No.
But back then...
1880, man.
Back then, you had to wear the scarlet letter,
yeah, you really were. You really were ostracized. So the identity of McCurdy's father is not known, but one believes it's Sadie's cousin, Charles Smith. Because later on in his life, McCurdy would use that name Charles Smith as his alias.
Oh.
You know, he looked
and
like
he kind of acted like he's in
it. It's almost like John Smith. I mean, can you give me something?
Yeah.
John Q. Public.
Yeah, I'm John Doe.
Yeah, John Doe. So in order to save Sadie the embarrassment and the shame of, at the time, of raising a little illegitimate child, her brother George and his wife Helen adopted young Elmer. But George died of tuberculosis.
The consumption. Can we go back to illegitimate child?
Yeah.
Now, doesn't that term itself, now, that always baffled me. Mm-hmm. Because if you put 10 kids in a line, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to tell you which one's illegitimate.
Yeah.
They all look like legitimate children to me.
Yeah.
They are children. They're not fake children. They're real children. How could they be illegitimate children? Now, I prefer the word bastard.
You're a progressive in
that. I'm a progressive in that. Let's not use that term illegitimate, because they are, in fact, it kind of takes away the sense of self, the sense of humanity,
yeah.
The sense of personhood. Yeah. Let's just call them bastards.
Yeah, that's okay? Really enlightened of you, Colonel.
Thank you.
It really is. So, anyway, George died of tuberculosis, the consumption, in 1890, and Sadie and Helen moved with Elmer to Bangor, Maine.
Now, see, Elmer reminds me of somebody called the Johnson. And then they moved to Bangor.
Yeah, Elmer moves to Bangor. Sadie eventually told her son that it was she and not Helen who was his real mother. So that had to be a shock.
I mean, you know what? That makes for a fun Thanksgiving, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it was a...
Because you know some uncle got all drunk and was like, she ain't even your mama. That's your mama.
Didn't that happen on The Sopranos with Polly Walnuts? Walnuts, yeah.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, his mom. He thought it was his mom the whole time. Ended up being his aunt. But anyway... That's what happened there. McCurdy, when he got the news, he became very upset. He grew resentful. And he was a teenager when he found out. He became unruly and rebellious. He began drinking as a teenager, which would be a habit that he would continue throughout the rest of his life. So he started to work for his grandfather as a apprentice plumber. Apparently, he was kind of competent at that job. I'm not sure how much plumbing they did in the 1890s, but
he was cleaning out the outhouse,
the well, or something. Yeah. But anyway, he was doing okay until they were a economic downturn in 1898, and he kind of threw him out of work. He lost his job, and in August of 1900, Sadie, his real mother, she died of a ruptured ulcer. So not good. Not good there.
That don't sound fun.
No. And his grandfather died of Bright disease the following month. So
Bright disease?
Bright's disease. I'm not sure what it is.
That ain't even a disease I heard of.
Google that. Write that down.
It's the eyeball consumption.
So he had a lot of deaths in a short period of time in his family. Shortly after his grandfather's death, McCurdy left Maine and began drifting first in the eastern part of the United States. And then out west, he kind of went from town to town. He got jobs as a miner and as a plumber. He would just do odd jobs. It was hard for him to keep a job, though, due to his drinking. He was, at this point, a full-blown alcoholic. Yeah, so...
There ain't nothing worse than a half-ass alcoholic.
No, he was dedicated. He was a full-blown alcoholic by the time he was in his early 20s. He eventually made his way to Kansas, out west, where he worked as a plumber in Sherryville, Kansas, and then moved to Lola, Kansas.
I keep going back to this, Timmy.
Isn't that the Kings, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the Kings. Wouldn't you think that, like, every faucet would be leaky back then?
You would think so. I mean, I'm not sure.
Because I don't know that they had rubber invented back then.
Yeah, I'm not sure what.
So how'd you put washers in there?
I have no idea what he was doing, but...
Bright's disease is a kidney disease, Timmy.
Okay, well, that took out his grandfather. In 1905, he was arrested for public intoxication. That was the first time he was arrested. He then relocated to Webb City in Missouri. In 1907, Elmer McCurdy joined the United States Army. He was assigned to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah, in his life, and he was a machine gun operator and was trained to use nitroglycerin in demonstration purposes, although they believe the extent of his training was likely very minimal. When we talk about his career as a train robber, you'll find out why they think that. But he was honorably discharged from the Army, the Quartermaster Corps, in November of 1910. So, I mean, he completed the Army okay. He made his way to St. Joseph, Kansas, where he met an Army friend. And they were arrested. Him and his Army friend were arrested for having, on November 19th, for having tools of the trade, shall we say. They were breaking into houses. And they had paraphernalia, chisels, hacksaws, funnels for nitroglycerin and gunpowder and money sacks. So they were arrested. During the arraignment, McCurdy and his friend told the judge that the tools were not intended to break into homes, but were tools they needed to work a foot-operated machine gun that they were inventing.
Oh, yeah, it was safer.
Yeah. So, and believe it or not, the jury found McCurdy not guilty. So he walks on the paraphernalia charge.
He came out with one of those Wile E. Coyote blueprints. Yeah. He's like, no, this is what we was doing with.
Yeah, yeah. He got the Acme blueprint. Yeah. After his release from county jail, his short-lived career as a bank robber and train robber began. His robberies were generally bungled affairs due to McCurdy's ineptness. McCurdy decided to, take the skills that he learned in the Army using nitroglycerin and incorporated those into his robberies, although not with the best of results. This often caused problems as he was a little bit overzealous.
Ain't nothing worse than somebody overzealous carrying nitroglycerin, Timmy.
And failed to determine the proper amount to use. In January of 1910, McCurdy tried to rob a bank in Norman, Oklahoma. He accidentally, they told him that the safe could not be open. It was locked, so he put his skills to use. As a demolition expert to use, and it blew out the front of the store. The safe remained intact. A 76-year-old grandmother who was knocked down by passing by the bank chased McCurdy down the street.
It was the big blowout sale at the bank.
Yeah, so
You're getting chased by a 78-year-old woman down the street.
Apparently the blast knocked McCurdy down, and when he got up, he was confronted by this 76-year-old grandmother who had her cane, started chasing McCurdy down the street. So he did get away, and he relocated to
relatively unscathed.
Relatively unscathed, not so much the bank, but no one was killed, and he got away, and he relocated to Lippinaw, Oklahoma.
This, Timmy, this reminds me. If you're going to do things, you need to have a basic understanding of law of physics.
Well, he thought he had that. He got training in the
Army. Because when things are going to blow up, the weakest thing's going to go first. And it reminds me, quick story. My son one day, we had an ice storm, Timmy. And my son decided to do me a favor and go out and clean my car.
Very nice of him.
It was. It was Taylor. And a very smart boy. Yeah. And he comes back in, holding the handle to my car door.
What?
Yeah. And he said, everything was frozen shut, Dad. And I said, so you just pulled like hell on the handle. And he's like, yeah, and it came off in my hand. And I was like, son, you need, as smart as y'all, son, you haven't taken a physics class, have you? Because it's going to break at the weakest point. And I replaced the handle, which are not easy to fix on a car. But Taylor has since taken a physics class, and I have not had him walk in with parts of my automobile in his hand.
Well, it sounds like McCurdy probably could have benefited from a physics class.
Well, if you have a safe that can't be blown,
yeah,
and you put, you know, a buttload of explosives on the safe,
mm-hmm.
where is the blast going to go?
Yeah, it's got to go out, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he wasn't, you know, the brightest bulb in the world. But anyway, he moves to Lipanah, Oklahoma. And there, him and three other men decide to rob the Iron Mountain, Missouri Pacific train. Who is following this guy, first of all? I mean,
yeah.
It's bad enough that
this guy's going to be a good leader.
Yeah, I'll take him. Yeah. McCurdy had heard that the cars on the train contained a safe with $4,000. So
let me guess. We ended up with a railroad car 4,000 feet in the air.
Well, they successfully stopped the train and located the safe. McCurdy then puts the nitroglycerin on the safe's door. But again, he used a bit too much. Now, the safe was destroyed in the blast, but so was the money. Now, McCurdy and his partners did manage to net $450 in silver coins, but the problem was that most of them were melted and fused to the frame of the safe. Not to be discouraged.
Well, he was a persistent little bastard.
They actually took the safe frame with the melted coins on it to a nearby neighboring town, to a bank in a neighboring town.
Try to make a deposit?
To try to cash them in. The bank officials quickly notified the sheriff's department.
Because they see banks, or they see
people bringing bank safes
all the time. Yeah.
So anyway, McCurdy and them then hightail it out of there safely. They keep getting away, so you give them that. Now, in September of 1911... McCurdy and two of his followers robbed the Citizens Bank in Chuckawa, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Kansas. After spending 2 hours breaking into the bank wall with a hammer,
they had all the nitroglycerin in the world.
McCurdy placed a nitroglycerin charge around the door of the bank's outer vault. He's persistent with it. He's going to make this work.
Yeah. He couldn't. Did he ever heard of a torch?
The blast.
This is the mad bomber right here, Jimmy.
The blast blew the vault door through the bank, destroying the interior, but it did not damage the safe inside. McCurdy then tried to blow the safe door open with nitroglycerin, but the charge failed to ignite. After the lookout man got scared and ran off,
and so the metal doors flying everywhere.
McCurdy and his accomplices stole about $150 in the coins that were in a tray outside the safe.
So they could have just walked in. They could have broken the glass, walked in, and taken those. But they beat the damn building with a hammer for two hours.
They blew up the building for $150.
$150.
Yeah. So later that night, the men hopped on a train, which took them to the Kansas border. So I guess Kansas was still territory then. So they were hightailing it out there. They split up, and McCurdy made his way to a ranch of a friend, Charles Rivard, near Bartsville, Oklahoma. He stayed in a hay shed on the property for 2 weeks and drank heavily.
Yeah.
McCurdy's final robbery took place on October 4th, 1911. He's not given up. The robbery took place in Okessa, Oklahoma. McCurdy and two accomplices planned to rob the Caddy train after hearing that it contained $400,000 in cash that was intended as a royalty payment to the Osage Nation, I guess, to the Indians.
Well, when you think of it, it had $400,000 in cash. Every train robber in the world be lined up.
Yeah.
You have to take a number to rob that train.
I think he needed to, you know, to do a lot of fact-checking on his assumptions. He's all rumors.
Is this a decimal or a period right here?
Yeah. Well, it didn't turn out well.
Now, that's a surprise.
Because instead of the train that they...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The caddy train that they were planning on robbing, McCurdy and his men mistakenly stopped a passenger train instead. Not all was lost because the men were able to steal $46 from a mail clerk.
Well, there you go.
They got two demijohns. I don't know what that is. Two demijohns of whiskey, an automatic revolver, a coat, and the train conductor's watch.
Oh, those bastards took the train conductor. How did the train conductor
know
time?
How would they know how to sign? I don't know. A newspaper of the robbery account of the robbery later called it one of the most inept and smallest in the history of train robbery. McCurdy at this point was disappointed by the haul and returned back to his friend Rivers Ranch on October 6th, where he began to drink heavily again with the whiskey that he had stole. So he got booze out of it.
He did get some whiskey out of that, so you got to give him that.
Now, by this time, McCurdy was also ill with
the consumption.
Tuberculosis, exactly. He had got it. Remember I said he worked in some mines off and on? Well, apparently he got some problems with his lungs and took tuberculosis, what was a mild case, and it turned into pneumonia. He was stayed up drinking with some of his ranch hands before going to sleep in the hayloft. And unbeknownst to him, that this last robbery that he did, where he got, you know, $46, they put a bounty on his head, a $2,000 reward for his capture.
Well, he's a public menace.
Yeah, now he's getting he got the attention of him. Even though he wasn't getting a lot of money, he was blowing shit up everywhere.
I know, everywhere.
And, you know, that ran
he
into...
He was the Ted Kaczynski of his time.
He really was. So, in the early morning hours of October the 7th, 1911, a posse of three sheriffs, the brothers Bob and Stringer, Fenton and Dick Wallace, traced McCurdy to the hayloft using bloodhounds. They surrounded the building and waited for daylight. In an interview following the incident on October 8, 1911, in the Daily Examiner, a local newspaper there in Oklahoma, the sheriff recalled that it began just around 7 o'clock. We were standing around waiting for him to come out when the first shot was fired at me. He missed me, and then he turned his attention to my brother. He shot three times at him, but he wasn't hit. We fired back every time we could, but we don't know. All of a sudden, the firing stopped. When we went to investigate, we found Elmer McCurdy laying down on the ground with a gunshot wound, laying on his stomach on the ground with a gunshot wound to his chest. His gun had exploded, and he had accidentally shot his own self down.
So even his bullets are more powerful than he's expecting. He probably is like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to teach these bastards a lesson. I'm going to take the gunpowder out of here, put nitroglycerin in my bullet.
I guess so. So apparently he was laying on his stomach firing, and his gun backfired, blew his chest up, So he died of a single gunshot wound to his chest while he was laying down firing a weapon.
Do you remember Schlepp Rock, Timmy?
Exactly. Now, if this was the end of the story, it'd be pretty amazing.
My granddaddy used to say, son, you could fuck up a bowling ball. Well, I believe Elmer.
Yeah, Elmer McCurry is in the same class. Yeah. Someone who can shoot their own self down. Yeah.
In a gunfight. And shooting yourself in the chest ain't an easy thing to do, Timmy.
I know.
Not with a rifle.
No, and he was laying on his gun, so it wasn't like he was committing suicide. He was trying to shoot him, but poor Elmer. Okay, so.
Oh, they got me.
Now, this is just the beginning of Elmer's career. He has a whole post-mortem career.
That's after death, Scotty J.
After death, Scotty J. Anyway, after he died, Elmer's body was taken to the local funeral home, the Johnson Funeral Home in Pashwaka, Oklahoma, where it surprisingly went unclaimed.
Yeah.
The owner and undertaker of the Johnson Funeral Home, Joseph L. Johnson, embalmed the body with arsenic-based preservatives, which was typically used in embalming in that era, and it preserved the body for a long period of time until the next of kin were notified. You know, they couldn't bury you right away.
He was a bastard, Timmy.
He was a bastard, and Joseph Johnson, this undertaker, didn't know that, and they assumed that someone would pick him up once they were notified. But again, this is back in the day where transportation wasn't. You know, it was hard to get around, so bodies had to keep for a while. So they preserved his body as best they could so that they could wait for the family. The undertaker shaved Elmer's face. He dressed him in a suit, put him in the back of the store waiting for the next of kin to show up. Of course, the next of kin never did show up. McCurdy's body lay unclaimed, and... But Johnson refused to release it for burial because he wanted to get paid for his services, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to recoup his losses, the undertaker decides that he's going to exhibit McCurdy's body for money. So he dressed the corpse in street clothes. He places the rifle in his hand, stands him in the corner of the funeral hall. He charges a nickel to visitors to come and see the bandit who wouldn't give up. And he called him various different things at different times. The mystery man of many aliases, the Oklahoma outlaw, the embalmed bandit. But anyway, and this became an attraction at his funeral home. He was charging people a nickel to come see this guy.
Well, yeah.
Poor Elmer.
Elmer was shot down in a gunfight.
Yeah, Elmer was more popular in death than he was in life. He was more successful because the bandit, as he became known, became a popular attraction at funeral homes and attracted the attention of carnival promoters. And Johnson received numerous offers to sell McCurdy's mummified body, but he hung on to him because he was a cash cow. He was a moneymaker.
Well, yeah, he was
a moneymaker at that point.
It's like having melted coins stuck to the side of his body.
Exactly. Well, a man, on October 6, 1960, a man calling himself Aver, contacted Johnson claiming to be Elmer McCurdy's long-lost brother from California. Aver, in quotes here, had already contacted the Osage County, Oklahoma sheriff and the local attorney to get permission to take custody of the body and ship it to San Francisco for a proper burial. Now, you probably guessed, if you haven't already, Avier was not an honest man. Remember I said McCurdy got all types of offers to sell the mummified body, but he turned them down? Well, it turns out that Avier was not the brother of McCurdy. But he was actually a carnival promoter, owner of a carnival. He wanted to buy the body and essentially take it around, in the circus and carnivals around the country and promote it. So the body was shipped. Johnson at first refused to release the body, but then he put it on a train to San Francisco. But there was a mistake, and it ended up in Arkansas City, Kansas instead.
Another Arkansas, Kansas. What the
yeah.
hell?
So he was meant to send this to who he thought was Aver, or who he thought was McCurdy's brother, puts it on a train to San Francisco. It ends up instead in Kansas. You know, it's like in the lost luggage department.
I was going to say he should have used FedEx.
He should have. But anyway, it was claimed in Kansas.
Well, hell yeah, free body. There's a free body. I'm going to take it.
And end up, it was the whereabouts of the body was unknown for several years, but it ended up in the display at the Great Patterson Carnival Show, a traveling carnival, in the early 1900s, 1919. So this thing, this body kind of rolls around the country at these different. Elmore is going around, you know, the Patterson's Traveling Carnival, they titled him the outlaw who would never be captured alive. Yeah. They come up with a big story on him.
Well, that's what he said, you'll never take me alive, and he shot himself in the chest.
So, you know, he becomes an attraction at this carnival tours all over the country until Patterson, the owner of the carnival, got into a little financial problem. And he sold his operation to a man named Louis Sunny. And Louis Sunny, a one-time Washington sheriff, acquired Elmer and his for his Wild West show as collateral on a $500 loan that he made to Patterson. So he used McCurdy's corpse in the Traveling Museum of Crime.
Well, yeah. He was a high-grade criminal.
A show that was featured wax replicas of outlaws such as Bill Dolan and Jesse James. In 1928, the corpse was part of the official sideshow of that accompanied the Great Trans-American Foot Race. I don't know what that is, but yeah. Apparently it was a thing.
First one to slap the body is across the finish line.
I guess.
When you was a kid, you'd have a race. It's like first one that hits a tree.
Yeah.
Well, first one hits a dead body, hits a corpse up there.
I think he was like a sideshow. So whoever would run, I guess they'd have a carnival, whatever, at the start of the race. I don't know what. It was like a marathon, I guess.
Crocodiles, dead bodies.
Yeah, man, that was a long run. 1,000 miles. In 1933, the body was acquired by director Dwayne Epser to promote his exploitation film Narcotic, which is, I guess, a famous film. I've never seen it.
But Reefer Madness.
Yes, kind of like Reefer Madness. It was a movie about the dangers of drugs, and the corpse was kind of used for promotion. They placed the corpse. Elmer's corpse was placed in the lobby of movie theaters as a dead dope fiend.
I wonder how many times they changed outfits on Elmer.
I don't know. Who Esper claimed had been killed while surrounded by police after he robbed a drugstore to support his nasty habit. So it was used to promote that film. By that time, the skin of McCurdy.
I was going to say, when does he start to decay? Because this is like the walking, but now I'm walking dead. I mean, how long does he hold up?
Well, by this time in 1928, his body, or 1933, his body started to shrivel. His skin started to shrivel and harden and reduce in size so that it was that of a child. Because, you know, yeah. People were shorter back then anyway, and now, you know, he's beginning to shrink. But that was okay with Esper. He just pointed out that the skin deterioration was proof that the dope fiend's was the proof that the effects of the dope fiend's drug abuse habit. So he blamed it on the narcotics. So anyway, after Sunny died in 1949, the corpse was placed in storage in Los Angeles warehouse. So it was there from 1949 to 1964. In 1964, Sony's son Dan loaned the corpse to filmmaker David F. Friedman. And the body made a brief appearance in Freeman's 1967 film, She Freak. So it must have been some B-rated.
So he went from a mad bomber to a sideshow guy to a dope fiend.
Now he's an extra in movies.
I wonder if he got paid for that.
You know, I don't think he got any royalties at all. In 1968, Dan Sunis sold the body again, along with other wax figures. By this point, they're thinking he's a wax figure, right? They sold him along with other wax figures for $10,000 to Spoonie Singh, the owner of the Hollywood Wax Museum.
Oh, hell yeah.
So now some little Asian guy owns it.
Yeah.
Singh had bought the...
And he put him on as the tallest man in the world.
Maybe.
There's a bunch of little Asian guys running around.
Singh then had bought the figures for two Canadian men who were exhibiting them at a show in Mount Rushmore. So they're guessing a little sideshow on. So now he's at Mount Rushmore. While being exhibited there, poor Elmer sustained some damage in a windstorm. The tips of his ears, along with his fingers and toes, were blown off. So he survived all those blasts.
You know, I was going to say, because you would have figured it would be him that would blow his fingers and ears off.
Yeah, but instead it was some windstorm in at Mount Rushmore. The men eventually returned McCurdy back to Singh, who decided that the corpse looked too gruesome and not lifelike enough to exhibit. So he doesn't look as good as the wax figures.
Now the bastard just got too ugly.
Yeah. In 1976...
Holy shit! Was he on the Ford ticket?
In 1976, McGurdy's corpse was painted orange.
Used as a rope cone?
And hung in the Laugh in the Dark Funhouse exhibition at the Pike Amusement Zone in Long Beach, California. So I guess he got sold again... to an owner of the pipe.
People knew it was an actual body.
Well, that's it. They didn't.
Yeah.
On December 8th, 1976, the production crew of the television show The $6 Million Man were filming scenes for the episode entitled Carnival of Spies at the Pike Amusement Park in Long Beach, California. During the shot, a prop man moved what he thought was a Max mannequin that was hanging from the gallows. When the mannequin's arm broke off, a human bone and muscle tissues were visible.
Oh!
Police were called in on the $6 Million Man set. Police were called in. That was with who did that?
Lee Steve Majors. Austin.
No, Lee Majors. Yeah, the character was Steve Austin. Lee Majors.
That's when he was married to Farrah Fawcett.
It was, yeah. She was the bionic woman. Right?
That's before she got the anal.
No, she wasn't a bionic woman.
No, that was
Lindsay Wagner.
Lindsay Wagner.
Yeah. So she was in Charlie's Angels, his wife. Okay, so when the arm broke off, human bone and muscle tissue was visible. They contacted the police. The police came in, and the mummified corpse of Elmer McCurdy was taken to the Los Angeles coroner's office. On December 9th, Dr. Joseph Chu, the coroner, conducted an autopsy and determined that the body was that of a human male who had died of a gunshot wound to the chest.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Chu, I wonder if that's the character that they made. Remember the coroner that, Jack Klugman played?
Yeah.
Forget his name. But I think it was after...
Quincy.
Quincy, yeah. I think it was after this Dr. Chu, who was in Los Angeles. And did all the celebrity deaths and mm-hmm. things. The body was completely petrified.
Well, I would think yeah.
Covered
and
in
so was the person who grabbed his arm and it fell off.
It was covered in wax and was covered with layers of paint. Orange paint. It was bright orange paint. It weighed approximately 50 pounds and was 63 inches in height. I don't know how much.
63, that'd be 5'3".
Okay, in height. Thank you. Tests were conducted. An examination also revealed incisions from his original autopsy and embalming, so that made sense. Tests conducted on the tissue show the presence of arsenic, which was a component of the embalming fluid
used in the late
1920s. Tests also revealed tuberculosis in the lung.
Consumption.
Yep, consumption, which McCurdy had developed while working as a miner, we said. And bunions. That McCurdy was documented to have had. So it all made sense.
You know what? This is what I don't get, Timmy. Now, have you ever had a bunion?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. They're painful.
Now, 100 years from now, look how far we've advanced in technology, communications.
Oh, dude, don't even say it.
And we know this son of a bitch had bunions.
You know they're going to say, 100 years from now, this guy had herpes.
Yeah. He had AIDS.
He had the AIDS. He had the crabs.
Had the body lice.
What they found was that while the bullet that caused the fatal wound presumably was removed from the original autopsy, the bullet jacket was found in his body.
So it was in there the whole time. He might have been pointing the gun backwards.
Yeah, he may have lived. They took the damn thing out. So these clues helped investigators pinpoint the area in which the man had been killed. Further clues to the man's identity were found when they did a dental analysis. So inside the mouth was a 1924 penny and ticket stubs to the Pike Sideshow and Louis Sony's Museum of Crime. So they're just putting tickets in this guy's mouth and pennies.
You live a fucked up life, Timmy. You think, oh, finally it's over. I get some rest. I get to go,
Man, it goes on for 100 more years. Forensic anthropologist Dr. Clyde Snow was called in to help to make the positive identification. Dr. Snow took radiographs of the skull, placed him over the photo of McCurdy taken at the time of his death in a process called superimposition. So I guess that's what they do now.
Superimposition? Yeah. You know what that is, Timmy? Mm-hmm. That's basically when the devil shows up for a podcast. Superimposition.
Yeah, you're right there. Snow was able to determine by the skull that it was indeed the corpse remains of one Elmer McCurdy.
This poor bastard.
By December the 11th of 1976, the story of McCurdy's journey had been featured in newspapers and on television and radio. Several funeral homes called the coroner's office offering to bury McCurdy free of charge, but the officials decided to wait and see if any living relatives would come forward and claim the body. It's been 60-some years. I don't think any relatives are going to show up.
No, I don't think anybody coming for him.
However, when no one did show up, Fred Olds, who represented the Indian Territory Posse of Oklahoma Westerns, I guess some, Western cowboy type of society, eventually convinced Dr. Thomas Noguchi, then the chief medical examiner, the coroner of the county of Los Angeles, so they got a new coroner, to allow him to bury the body in Oklahoma. After further testing to ensure proper identification, Olds was allowed to take custody of the body. On April 22nd, 1977, a funeral procession was conducted to transport McCurdy's body to the Boot Hill section of the Summit View Cemetery in Guthrie, Oklahoma.
So he finally got a resting place.
He did. A graveside service was attended by approximately 300 people and was conducted after McCurdy was buried next to another outlaw, Bill Doolin.
Which is funny because had they buried the dumb sumbitch when he died...
Yeah, he wouldn't have gotten no recognition.
He wouldn't have had nobody.
No, he'd been tossed in Potter's Field, that would have been all. But to ensure that McCurdy's body would not be stolen, the body was buried in two 2 feet of concrete was poured over the coffin.
But then somebody came along
with
6 ounces of nitroglycerin, blew the headstone into the next
God,
body.
What a story. That's the story of outlaw Elmer McCurdy.
Now that's working hard to be an outlaw.
Man, I'm telling you, he did.
My favorite part is being chased down the street by a 78-year-old lady.
After you blown up the bank.
Yeah, she pissed because you knocked her down.
Oh, the poor guy. Okay, Colonel, any final thoughts on outlaw Elmer McCurdy?
I think hopefully this will be a cautionary tale for the devil and she'll start living straight.
I would hope so. Man, she needs to learn or she's going to end up like Elmer.
She's going to end up with tickets in her mouth.
She is. Oh, my God. Okay, where can people find us, Colonel?
You can go. The best way to find us is go right to the iTunes. Mm-hmm. Now, I am working on a YouTube channel, but go right to the iTunes. Find us. tell us what you think. Go right to our Facebook page, History Dweebs.
Yeah, we have a group Facebook page on Facebook. We have a regular Facebook page. We have a group Facebook page. We have a Twitter at History Dweebs 1. But mostly people interact on a regular Facebook page. Just look up History Dweebs. Mm-hmm. We post stuff up there all the time. So, you know, it's interesting. It's a lot of interesting stuff, or stuff I find interesting anyway.
As I've said before, if you're an actual history dweeb, it's a great page. My son, who, you know, won't listen to a podcast to save his life, to ungrateful little son of a bitch. The son that I'm paying for to go to this can graduate from college this year.
You know, Scott said you're cussing more on the podcast. He said to point that out to you.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, you know why it is, Scott? It's because my damn kid's been home for 3 weeks. That's why I'm cussing more. My blood pressure's higher. I got less hair than what I do has more gray.
So you're talking about Taylor?
I'm talking about Tanner, the rat bastard.
Okay.
So anyway, he's like, oh man, I love your history, that History Dweebs page. Mm-hmm. I was like, what did you think of what? He's like, oh, I don't listen to our podcast.
It's true. We have people who just follow the page and never listen to a podcast. And then we have people who listen to the podcast and never go to our page. It's kind of weird. But we'd like for you to do both, of course. But if you do one, that's cool with us. And then there's some people, the very devoted dweebs out there that do both. They go to they check out our page, and they also
Funny thing, Timmy, it used to be, because of the colonel job here where I work, it's tied to employment. And when the economy was getting really bad, every month the unemployment numbers would come out, and every month the news would come down here, and I would be the one that got interviewed. I was... Believe it or not, considered an expert in the field at something.
I believe that.
And my boys, now, you know, you think it's kind of an exciting thing.
Being interviewed for
television. Hey, I'm going to be on Channel 9 News and Channel 12 News tomorrow and Channel whatever.
Right.
Do you know what my boys used to do?
Right.
They would watch them to see if I was making stuff up as I went along. They would accuse me of making stuff up, and they'd be like, nah, that's not a real answer. You're making that one up, Dad. And I was never making things up, but only rarely did they watch me. And when they did, you know, you think most kids, because they was young then.
Right.
Going back to, what, 2007? So, you know, these boys are only 13 years old,
right.
And Logan's even younger. You think they'd be running around school telling me, hey, my dad was on TV, my dad's going to be on TV. They wouldn't even watch a damn thing. And then if Renee happened to have it on when it came on, she'd be like, hey, you hear? They look at it and be like, yeah, I don't think he's telling the truth. That's the kind of kids I got. So, Scotty J, if you ask why I'm cussing more, that should slow down because they are all safely back at college that I am paying for.
All right, so find us on Facebook, find us on iTunes, find us on Twitter. Hopefully Brandy's Twitter is fixed now, because you know her Twitter was broke.
She had a broken twat, Timmy. She had a broken twat.
We'll see you
Brandy
next time.
Brandy cannot twat anyway.
Yes, any final words for Brandy?
Yeah, Brandy, if I know it's an illness, and I don't want to judge you, but you thieving son of a bitch, could you just live right, fly right for a little bit so you can make the podcast?
And if while you're in there, you know, do some research for the story while you're in there.
Read a script for the love of God. We emailed it to you.
Yeah.
Brandy liked the mafia. They seen her so many times, she got one of those speed cards where you go in there.
They just wave her on in.
Wave her on in.
Yeah, Brandy, welcome back.
She got a PlayStation in her cell. She liked the mafia. It's like when John Gotti went to jail. That's what it is. The devil.
Yeah, she's got her own suite.
Yeah.
Okay, so check us out on Facebook, check us out on iTunes, and we'll see y'all next time on History Dweebs.
Good day, listeners.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.